It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch of all, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! Welcome to Just a Bit Outside with Stark and Massaro. I am your host, Ian Starkman, and I am joined by my co-host, Mike Massaro. Lots of great sports that we will touch on today, including Titans battle the Saints, bounce back week in the NFL, Big Ten has a big week in college football, the Maple Leafs climb the standings, and World Cup of Soccer qualifying. But first, Mike, how was your sports week?
Well, I attended my first live sporting event in quite some time last Friday night. I went to the Argos Ticats game down at BMO Field. Good to be back. You know, unfortunately, it started to rain shortly as the game started. So that's always pleasant being in an outdoor venue. But, you know, it was good. Nice to watch some football live again in person. And Argos beat Hamilton to clinch home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So now they'll host the East Final December 5th. There's a good chance Hamilton will be coming back for that game. But, you know, nice to watch some live football, be back amongst people in the wild, yeah. I guess, so to speak.
Any fan observations for our listeners?
No, not really. Pretty
shirt off guy on the in the freezing cold. None of those guys.
No, I was also seeing a lot of people I haven't seen in a few months in person. So catching up with them, and there wasn't too much that kind of stood out. I mean, good balance of fans, Argos and Hamilton, because it is a short drive. So those games are always well attended, but you know, a good atmosphere. It felt like people were getting ready for the playoffs, and you know, looks like the Argos are going to be tough to beat in the East. So that was good. And then Saturday we had a big wrestling pay-per-view at night, but I won't get into that. No, that's not your not your wheelhouse, and you probably don't care.
Not yet.
Yeah, we got to get your boys on it. But Saturday, I started my Christmas decorations. I've been talking about this now for a couple weeks. So took advantage of the good weather, got up on the roof, put all the clips in, the string lights, put those up on the house. And then Sunday woke up and felt like I just ran a marathon. So that's kind of where
body's a little sore after climbing those ladders and getting up on the roof.
Well, I think you just you constrict yourself, right? Because you don't want to fall off. So like everything tenses up. It was cold as hell. So that's going through you. You know, this peak athlete here going up on the roof and definitely feeling it the next couple of days. But I'm going to get the rest of it done this week. I got home Friday night from the game, and driving home, noticed a couple of neighbors beat me to it. They had their lights up and on. So, you know, I took that deeply personal, and I got to respond.
You know, you're better than I. I know my kids are always like, hey, let's put this up. Let's do the Christmas lights this way. Let's hang them from the rooftop. And I'm like, unless I can reach it from the ground, the lights aren't going anywhere, pal. All right. So let's just sprinkle some around this tree, maybe wrap around that pole and call it a day. You know, people don't understand.
Put them in the car. Come visit my place once it's all set
up.
We are. You know, maybe that will tide them over for a bit.
That's awesome, man. That's good. I haven't even thought about Christmas decorations yet. But actually, speaking of still being nice out a little bit, I went golfing again last week.
Wow.
And I know on our last episode, I spoke about it probably being my last golf round and how, you know, I had a 38 on the front nine, and I whispered to my father-in-law, hey, I'm on career low watch. Hey, you know, and I jinxed myself and screwed it up on the back nine. Well, I got out one more time this week. I went as a single, so I joined up with three veteran old-time golfers, and these guys, they were just grizzled vets out there, you know, just winter golfer type guys out to have a good time. One guy was a dart-a-hole guy.
Wow.
And I'm not talking about a smooth Du Maurier. This guy was hacking harsh marble reds for 18 holes. Every time he spoke to me, I could just see the tar on his tongue, you know?
Love it.
And when he was breathing, I couldn't tell. Is that harsh smoke coming out of his mouth, or is that just the cold air crisp in the afternoon? But it was fun to get out still and hit the ball. I mean, I had three bogeys through the first six holes, and I was just like, oh, you know, standard round here. I'll get my standard number and move on with it. I lipped out a three-footer on the fifth hole. It was cold, but again, I mean, just happy to be out there. You know, you got to take advantage of those days in a November, you know. And then I birdie seven and I birdie eight. Both approach shots, I absolutely stuck them for tap-ins for birdie. And I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. Finish nine. I'm one over 36, but it's perfect, right? I'm playing with three guys. They don't know me. They don't know what I shoot, really. You know, no need to have a conversation with them about what my scorecard looks like. Didn't want to jinx myself. So I'm like, I'm just going to move along here and keep it rolling.
The one guy's probably just worried about, do I have enough smokes to get me through this back nine?
I was worried for him, too. I was like looking at his pack. I'm like, I don't know if he's going to make it to 18.
Yeah. Will he survive the back nine?
So we were walking. He was walking, you know, wow. No problem walking.
Better than me.
Yeah. So on my course to get from the ninth to the 10th tee, you kind of got to walk through the parking lot. So this black car pulls up as I'm walking through, you know, car window goes down. It's my buddy Bob. And he says to me, hey, how's the round going out there? And without even thinking, I say 36. Going for the career low. Oh, man.
You learned nothing last week?
I jinxed myself again. And he was like, hey, good job. Hey, good luck out there. He's like, I had a great front nine as well. Blew up on the back. So I get to the 10th tee. You know, double bogey 10. Again, right off the hop. Oh, man. I'm already in my head. I get to the 12th. Tee shot out of bounds off the tee. Next shot into the water. I got a 9 on the par 5 12th. I ended up with a 36-49. Unbelievable. Talk about two different rounds, day and night rounds. Like, have you ever had a round like that where one was so low and the other nine was so bad?
No. Can't say. I do, though. I do believe that certain courses, obviously, back nines or front nines are much different, right? Some are more forgiving front, challenging back, vice versa. So it is common to kind of see that, especially for me. You know, maybe I'll do kind of poorly on the front and better on the back. So not to that extreme, though. I'm usually high on both sides.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, when I got home, it was like Kramer from Seinfeld when he walks into Jerry's apartment, throws the clubs on the ground. You want these? I don't want them. I stink. That's how pissed off I was. And now the worst part is I gotta wait until next season to redeem myself because I don't think I'm getting out again. It's too cold. Not gonna do anything this weekend. So it's over. And that's how it ended.
Your buddy Bob that drove up, that wasn't Bob Sacamano, was it?
Love him, man. I texted him after the 12th hole. I was like, Bob, I just got a 9. And he's like, oh, no, we've all been there before. But, you know, it was good. And then a lot of watching sports this weekend for me. I really, really got on the couch and watched a ton of sports, college football, the Leafs game, some golf. Leafs game, Saturday night in Buffalo. I don't know if you saw this, but not a lot of fans there. I mean, this used to be a huge rivalry. I understand the border. A lot of, the Golden Horseshoe folks, just as you mentioned in Hamilton, coming down to BMO. They like to go to Buffalo and watch the games there. But something I got to call out, and I feel like it's a south of the border issue. What is with fans banging on the glass every time opposing player skates by them? It's so ridiculous. It is so stupid. Why do some idiots feel the need that banging on the glass is going to make a difference in the game? It's like they're at the zoo trying to get the attention and get of the tigers and get them all riled up. It's just the dumbest thing. And really, I hate to say it, it's all the southern markets. I know Buffalo's not really that southern, but it's the American markets. You don't see it at Canadian rinks. I don't understand it, but it drives me nuts.
Well, the glass is so thick as well, and there's so much noise on ice level that you've been on the ice a hell of a lot more than I have. You probably don't even hear it half the time.
No.
As a player.
No. No, they don't care. It's it reminds me of that Steve Sullivan clip. He gets he gets high sticked and he's bleeding, you know, and the fans right in the glass there, and he's laughing at him, pointing at him, this, that, the other. And then about 10 minutes later, puck goes over the glass, clips the guy right on the head. He's split open, bleeding. And Steve Sullivan looks at him like, USOB, there you go. Right back in your face. I love those revenge on fans. It's the best. But hey, stick around for our T5 coming up after the break. We got lots of great sports to talk about. Mike and I will dive into some picks as well. So we'll be right back. With some of the usual top teams having a blowout wins, our T1 game of the week will be a top team that is not getting a lot of love yet. The Tennessee Titans hosted the New Orleans Saints in what was a rough game in the colder than usual weather of Nashville. But both of these teams played a great back and forth game that saw turnovers, big hits, and missed kicks, leading to Tennessee stopping the Saints at the end of the game as they went for a two-point conversion to tie the game. As the Titans held on to a 23-21 win that now puts them in first in the AFC at 8-2. Mike, should we start considering Ryan Tannehill as one of the top QBs in the league?
Ryan Tannehill, no. The Titans, I think, deserve a little bit more respect. Six wins in a row now for them puts them 8-2, first in the conference, as you mentioned. Before we touch on the game, just a look ahead here. They have some very winnable games down the stretch. They play the Houston Texans twice, Jacksonville, Miami, San Francisco, and then the two tough ones, they go to New England and Pittsburgh. So realistically, if things go as they have been this season, they should win at least five more of those games and puts them at a 13-4 record with the 17 games this year. That could and should be enough to keep top seed. And, you know, Derrick Henry's out. We know that. He's missed two games. They go into LA last Sunday night, beat the Rams convincingly, and then they come home without Julio Jones, two of their premier playmakers on offense. And, you know, the Saints kept it tight, and the Saints were without Alvin Kamara as well. So it's pretty much a who's who of who's playing here because everybody's injured. But it was a tight game. You know, the Saints, I think the Saints played well. Credit to them. Keeps themselves in the playoff mix in the NFC. But, I mean, the Titans, these are what good teams do. They win these types of games when players are missing. You know, these tight battles, they don't lose like we saw Baltimore do Thursday night in Miami. Titans don't do that.
No, they don't. And that's what the Titans need to continue to do. And they're showing it by becoming the second team in NFL history to win five straight games over playoff teams from the season before. You had the Bills, Chiefs, Colts, Rams, and now the Saints. We talked about Tannehill. He ran and threw for a touchdown. Well, former Titan Trevor Siemian, he had two TDs as well. He passed for over 298 yards. He looks to really be establishing himself as the new Saints starting quarterback. I like both these teams. I thought they both played very well. They're sneaky good teams that just happened to be playing each other at the right time, which made for a great game. Funny enough, you know, the Saints, you know, missed that PAT in the first half, cost them at the end because they had to go for two at the end of the game to tie it, had the penalty, had to back up even further. It just didn't work out for them at the end. Some good defense by the Titans. I think that, you know, the Titans, as you mentioned, they got a really good chance at this AFC number one spot. Playing all these teams below 500, the expectations there, they need to keep going and stay the course, make sure that they're preparing properly. They still have a bye that they're getting on the back half as well, which will help them. Resting some players, who knows what their lineup's going to look like as they get down the stretch. Will they rest players if they get a good enough lead, which could help them going into the playoffs? They're definitely in the playoffs. Where they're going to see, that'll be the big test. But you know what? I like this Titans team. I don't know about the offense being what it is with Tannehill and without the King there, but as a full rounded team, they're legit.
Yep, I agree. And, you know, like you said, the schedule down the stretch is quite favorable for them in their last seven games of the season. Sprinkle a bye in there, obviously, but that's the thing, right? They got to keep winning, and they've done that. They've won six in a row. Should beat up Houston this week and continue to not only separate themselves from Indianapolis in their division, but in the AFC as well. Ravens had a real chance to keep momentum going, and they had a stinker last Thursday night in Miami, you know. And I will get into the other teams, I'm sure, momentarily. But Titans, they've done the job. Saints, better response after losing a game to the Falcons they probably shouldn't have lost. And that's kind of what the Saints have been this year. You don't know what you're going to get week in, week out. All you know is they're going to be competitive in most games and hang in there. But right now they're in a playoff spot in the NFC, hanging in the wild card conversation. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, not having Kamara in the lineup Sunday hurt them.
Yeah. I mean, the Titans were helped by a bad roughing the passer call, which should have been, you know, fourth down. They got the first down because of that. I don't know what's going on with the refs this year. It's a tough year for the refs. There's been some questionable calls all over the league, but this one seemed to help the Titans, and they were able to pull off the win.
Yeah.
Last week, we talked about the underdogs and how they dominated the league. Well, our T2 will have a different tone today. It was a bounce back week for some of the top teams in the NFL as Dallas, Buffalo, and Green Bay all won and covered their spreads. This week also made us start to question teams we thought might be on their way down, as New England, Carolina, and Philadelphia all had impressive wins. Mike, your thoughts on week 10 of the NFL?
Great responses, mainly from Dallas and Buffalo. And I think we touched on that last week with the Cowboys. These games happen over the course of a season. You know, you have these boneheaded games that you lose. And, you know, their game against Atlanta yesterday on Sunday, was over by halftime. They had 33 points at half, and it ended 43-3. So that's what you're expecting to see from these good teams. How do they respond after a less than stellar performance? And the Bills did it too. The Bills beat up the Jets bad. 45-17 was their final after losing, you know, to the Jaguars last week. So two big responses from two teams that you expect this from.
Yeah, and I've been on the Dallas Cowboys train all year, obviously. And the one piece that was missing, Zeke Elliott. He hasn't had a great year. But the offense has been able to roll without him. And sure enough, he shows up this week. Two TDs for him. I thought he played great. Just gave him a different look. Obviously, Dak Prescott back to his old self again. He had two TD passes to CeeDee Lamb. So the offense is really cooking for Dallas. Odd stat, didn't really think this would be something that the Cowboys would be a first of, if this old franchise, but the Cowboys had 29 points in the second quarter for their highest scoring quarter in franchise history. Wow. This is definitely an offense that needs to be taken seriously. Can they keep it up when they get into some gritty playoff games? Who knows? But I really like this Cowboys. As for the Falcons, I mean, it was over, you know, once they had the 12 man on the field for the extra point. Dallas then went for two after the penalty. I think it's might be curtains for the Iceman with Atlanta after this season.
Yeah, they've lost some pieces here and, you know, slowly kind of doing this rebuilding thing. I don't know if Matt Ryan will keep going or if he goes to a new home next year, but it just feels like I think they're what,
time for a change.
Yeah, 4-5 right now. They're probably, you know, not going to be in the conversation much longer in terms of playoff picture. I wouldn't put them there now anyways, but yeah, they got to rebuild that team.
Yeah. Now another team that kind of rebuilt last year into this year and now is really starting to find their form, the New England Patriots, 45-7 win over Cleveland. I thought this would be a close game in all honesty after the performance by the Browns last week, or actually last couple weeks. But I think the Pats are back, man, and it's scary. You know, Mac Jones, three TD passes. The Pats are now 6-4. They got four straight wins. They've seemed to figure something out. And as they always say, the Patriot season does not start till Thanksgiving, and they're rolling a week in advance. I'd be a little worried if I was any of those other teams, maybe even the Bills with that division. The Patriots look good.
Yeah, right now, I mean, they're sitting fifth in the AFC, and they play the Falcons this week. So, I mean, that the good times, I'm sure, exactly, will keep rolling for Bill and company. But after that, I mean, they have, you know, four pretty tough games. They got to play the Titans. They have to play the Bills twice and go to Indianapolis. I only put Indy there because they are in the playoff conversation right now. I think the Patriots are a much better team, though. But, you know, two games left with the Bills, that will obviously decide the division. I think Buffalo has the edge on them for at least this season. But through 10 games, I mean, very, very impressive bounce back season for the Patriots. And, you know, they should put themselves in the playoffs, I would think, at this point.
Yeah, and oddly enough, on the other end of Patriots land, the Buccaneers lost again. It's time to Washington, 29-19. Bruce Arians said, "We're a very dumb football team." What a great quote to say after a loss. Brady had two more interceptions, but, you know, without a run game, doesn't really have one right now. Brady's unable to throw the deep ball. I'm really concerned about Tampa Bay. I mean, they're still first in the NFC South. You know, the Saints and Panthers breathing down their necks just a little bit. We talked about the Saints playing better. The Panthers obviously got a big win with Cam Newton back. I'm worried about Tampa Bay. I wouldn't be putting all my eggs in that basket.
I think the three other divisions in the conference, I think right now you would probably say Dallas, Arizona, and Green Bay are performing better than Tampa. And I think you can even put the Rams there as well, going into Monday Night Football. All of them are 7 or 8 wins, and I think they've played better. You know, it even goes back to week one when we talked about that Dallas-Tampa game. You know, it's still hard to count out Tom Brady. I mean, every time somebody counts him out, he proves them otherwise. I've done it. Everybody has done it at some point, you know, in the last couple of years, thinking that this is it, and then they turn around. I think something similar happened last season. I think it was against the Saints, maybe, where they had a real stinker of a game. Arians came out, made some comments, and then they just went on a run. But Washington played them tough last year in the playoffs. Tyler Heinicke seems to love playing Tampa because he kind of earned his keep last year in the playoffs,
sure,
with that spot start. And I think he's kind of established himself as the Washington quarterback moving forward. But Carolina, you know, New Orleans, Carolina had a big win. They're obviously going to be jazzed up with the recent re-addition, I guess we should say, of Cam Newton.
Odd.
Yeah, it was, but it's one of those that just seems to fit. Now, I know it's different because it's a different coaching staff, and obviously he needs to learn the playbook and all those things. It's a different system from what he's known in Carolina, but there's a chance he might start this weekend, and guess who they play? Ron Rivera, his former coach. Ooh. And Washington. So that could be an interesting storyline to watch. But I mean, Carolina has some good players defensively. They've made some trades. They got some good young guys that they've had for a couple years. A healthy Christian McCaffrey makes a significant difference. I think getting away from Sam Darnold is the right move for them. And, you know, they got some tough games here, but some winnable ones. They got Washington, Miami, Atlanta. Those are three very winnable games for them. But then they got to play Tampa Bay twice, Buffalo, New Orleans. So it'll be tough for them, maybe around anywhere between 7 to 9 wins for them. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's encouraging. They played well on Sunday.
Now, college football is a lot like Survivor. Each week, someone gets voted out of the playoffs, and that will be our T3. On Saturday, Oklahoma took the L to number 13 Baylor, which sets their fate as they now sit outside the top four, while Georgia, Alabama, Oregon, and Ohio State all won. But look out for the Big Ten as they heat up. Mike, which Big Ten school do you like most right now?
What am I picking?
And you can't say Wisconsin.
Then I don't have a comment. Wisconsin Badgers win again, 6 in a row. I think the next couple of weeks are going to be big in the east side of the Big Ten. This week, obviously, is Ohio State and Michigan State in Columbus. Yep. You know, that's a big one. And then November 27th, we have Ohio State traveling to Michigan. And looking at things over the next couple of weeks, Ohio State, if they can get past Michigan State here this week, they go to 10-1. They'll play Michigan. That game, I like Michigan to win this week as well. They got, where are we here? At Maryland. So they should win that. That could set up on the November 27th, Ohio State, Michigan. The winner ends up taking the east side of the Big Ten to go and lose to the Wisconsin Badgers in the Big Ten championship. So it's exciting.
And you know what? Michigan, they're playing good defense right now. I mean, it was a tough defensive game against Penn State, but they were able to pick up the win this week. You know, the tight end, Eric All, who scored a 47-yard TD from McNamara with 3 minutes left to quiet Beaver Stadium there and get that win was just awesome to see. You're right. Michigan versus Ohio State will be a bigger game than Bama versus Georgia because it's a loser is definitely out. It's a game seven. The loser of that game is toast, no chance to get in. Whereas I think Bama, Georgia, there's a chance Georgia could lose. They'll still get in too. Who knows what the committee's got planned up their sleeve with for those two, but they're going to have to play as well. But talking about those top four, I mean, Georgia are just so good. They're an NFL team. They gave up 17 points to Tennessee, and it was like they lost the game. The kids couldn't even celebrate their 41-17 win. This team is a defensive dream. Sprinkle in some decent offense, and I think they got a real chance of going all the way. They're going to keep that number one spot. It's going to be Georgia-Bama to play that SEC title game. And the only one move on to the playoffs, it's going to be a bit of a shame. But I think Georgia, I mean, watching the games, they haven't played each other, but I like Georgia over Bama so far. It'll be interesting when they do play. They rightfully deserve that number one spot.
At one point on Saturday, it was 10-10 against Tennessee, and I had to do a double take. I thought maybe there was a weather delay, and they were showing a previous game from a couple of years ago. Because I'm like, how the hell is this game tied? And then, you know, things corrected themselves, and Georgia won convincingly. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens Tuesday night. The college football playoff rankings come out. That's typically when we'll have an idea of what the top four are going to look like. They haven't.
I don't think anything is going to change. No. I know this podcast will be in the future. I don't think anything's going to change. You're going to see the same four.
Yeah. The only thing I could see is maybe Ohio State jumping into third, perhaps ahead of Oregon. But I mean, that argument's not really there because Oregon did beat them earlier this year. Cincinnati won again. They're probably going to stay on the outside for now at fifth. But as we go forward, I think what we're going to see here, you know, provided Ohio State and Michigan both win this weekend, that could set up a big, big shift in the rankings. If one of them, you know, let's just say theoretically Ohio State stays in the top four going into that final game and lose to Michigan, Michigan could get into the top four.
Yes.
Easily.
Yeah. And you know what? I get that the Pac-12 is awful. But you can't blame the Oregon Ducks for who they have to play each week. They play great football against, you know, decent teams, and they just keep winning. 38-24 over Washington State. They played very good. They're going to keep winning. They're going to win that Pac-12. You got to keep them in as one of the top four teams. They beat Ohio State, so that's their golden ticket to get into the playoffs. I think the committee is going to want a West Coast team. Oregon's going to be it. There's none of those California teams are decent enough to get in. So I think Oregon's going to lock up one of those four spots, so they're in. And you're right, it's going to come down to which Big Ten team gets in.
Yeah, and something you touched on a couple weeks ago that's really stuck in my mind with Bama being ranked second in the, well, now in the AP, but also in the college football rankings, that they're going to have to play Georgia at some point. Georgia beats them, which I think we both agree on, for the SEC title. How do you argue that a two-loss team deserves a spot over Cincinnati, who could be 12-0 by that time?
That's Cincinnati's only way of getting in, Mike. I think Cincinnati's only way of getting in is Georgia to beat Bama. Cincinnati slides into four. If Bama beats Georgia, they both got one losses, they're both in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So you made that point, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's really stuck in the back of my mind. But, you know, exciting couple weeks here. We're going to continue to watch this unfold, and it's been a great season, and it's going to be a great finish over the last couple games here, and then we start getting the conference championships.
Now, speaking of playoffs, the Maple Leafs are 5 months away from game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. but that's where our T4 will begin. You're laughing, Mike. I know you like that line. Toronto's now second in the Atlantic behind only the Florida Panthers after winning 8 of their last 9, including wins over Buffalo, Calgary, and Philadelphia this week. And I want to start by saying that Jack Campbell is now a legit number one goalie in all of the NHL. For sure, any team he's going to play for, he's got to be considered for the U.S. team. I know they got a bunch of good goaltenders, but he's playing that good. He's playing very well. He played up against Vasilevsky last week. This week, he did very well playing against some of these teams in Calgary and Philadelphia. But the question is, how should they handle his workload? That was the whole reason they went and got Mrazek. And Mrazek looks like he's still going to be out until early December. You can't have Campbell playing all these games every night. He does have some history of injuries. And I'm really worried about Michael Hutchinson playing at all. I don't want him in the net whatsoever. So that brings in Joseph Woll, who got his first NHL win on Saturday, albeit a 5-4 win against the Buffalo Sabres. It's not pretty, but that's what backup goalies do. And we talked about backup goalies and backup QBs last week. And backup goalies just need to come in, stop the gap, give the starter a rest, make some big saves. Yeah, you're going to let a few in because you're rusty, but it's going to be a big night for an offensive team like the Leafs. All he's got to do is beat the other goalie, and he did it. Give your team a chance to win. As sloppy as it may be, they don't need the shutout. And he did that. Therefore, my vote is let the young guy play. Let him be around the team for another 2 or 3 weeks while Mrazek comes back. Let him play 2 or 3 games. And then once Mrazek's back, he can take on a bigger workload and give Campbell a rest at that time.
Yeah, I agree. And be strategic about when you're playing him, right? They're obviously right. Going to put him in a position to try and compete and win. Of the 4 games they played last week, Buffalo is probably the team you put him against. And they did that, and it panned out. Just to your point about Campbell, I'm a big fan of his as well. I really like his humble demeanor and everything, but I think he's a outstanding goaltender. And regardless of what the Flyers are, it's not easy to win in Philadelphia. I've been to a game there, and it's a tough place to play. So to go there and shut them out midweek.
Some might even say it's gritty.
Some might say that. Some might say that. I hope people understand that reference, but I'm not going to get into that. But anywho, the best mascot in the NHL, I don't know. But no, like the Leafs are playing well, 3 wins in a row, got 4 big ones this week. And, you know, there's a lot to like about the team.
Yeah, they are playing well. They're obviously that core four is still leading the team and keeping them going. Although we saw some secondary scoring in Buffalo, which produced the win, and you're going to need that. John Tavares scored his 100th goal as a Maple Leaf, which is a massive accomplishment. I feel that he prefers to play with Marner, and it shows. Remember 2-3 years ago, I guess now, he had that huge year playing for Marner. Obviously, that was part of the conversation when he signed with Toronto. And then it gets circled back this year. He starts with Marner, and of course, he has a great start to the year. You give these two a chance to run with it, I feel, and maybe even they can be line mates for Team Canada come February. But it looks like Sheldon Keefe is going back to his original lines. It looks like William Nylander, who got benched in Buffalo for some defensive issues, is going to come back down to the line with Tavares, which is fine. Nylander's playing great. He's found his game. He's scoring at an amazing pace. 7 goals thus far with a big round number, I feel, he has on his mind for the end of year. I'm thinking he wants something maybe in the 40s this year, would really, really put a nice number beside his name. When people really talk about the Leafs, he's maybe 4th on that depth chart. So something big for him would be a great year for Nylander. And this core four, you can tell, they still care about stats and getting those cookies. And I don't blame them. It shuts up the media. It shuts up the noise from, you know, the know-it-alls at your office that continually try to put down these guys. Let the Leafs get out there. Let them get their points. Let them be at the top of the standings when it comes to points and goals. Those four need them, and it shows that they're really eager to get those points.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to shift the lines a bit, what do I always say, I think, on every friggin' show? It's early. This is the time of year to do it. You know, you know what you have now. They move the lines up, and they've had a lot of success the past couple of weeks. So why not go back and try it? if it doesn't work out, you know what has been working and you can easily go back to that. But any team in any sport where you have these combinations and lineups and everything, it's important to find multiple looks, right? You can't be one dimensional. You can't wheel the same lines or the same lineup or the same starters every game. You have to adapt to different situations. That's what makes good teams great teams. So what the hell? Why not?
Yeah, and well, speaking of great teams, shifting in the NHL here, Leon Draisaitl has 15 goals and 31 points in 14 games. 50 and 50 is in reach for this guy, especially playing with McDavid. And I think 200 points in a season, it's a possibility for one of these two Oilers. I say it every week. You guys got to be watching them. They're unbelievable to see. Their speed, their ability to handle the puck and play together is amazing. Draisaitl, if he played for any other team in the NHL, he'd be the best player on that team. But because he plays with McDavid, he's second fiddle, and it's crazy.
They're a cheat code.
Cheat code. It's the best way to say it. Now, although the Oilers are the top team in the West, they weren't the most important team in their city this weekend, which brings us to our T5. With 48,000 in attendance in Edmonton, the Canadian men's national soccer team beat Costa Rica 1-0 to stay undefeated in the CONCACAF standings for qualification into the 2022 World Cup. Mike, does this win lock them into one of the spots?
I'd love to say yes. My heart says yes, but there's still some games to be played. Big 1-0 win, Jonathan David, in front of over 48,000 in Edmonton on last Friday. Keeps them third spot, which would put them in right now. The only team in CONCACAF of the eight teams remaining that are undefeated heading into Tuesday night against Mexico. So that's a big game. You know, had a great result in Mexico City, and we'll see what happens. This will be the final game of 2021, and then they have four games between January and the end of March to decide it all. But a tremendous, tremendous performance, a great run of form they're on here, and the whole country's behind them, and it's awesome to see.
Yeah, and I understand that these qualifications are being played all over the world right now in all different types of weather, but man, these poor players playing in the cold weather in Edmonton, I mean, the Costa Ricans looked like they would have rather have forfeited so they could just get back home than kick around this frozen ball on this frozen field. They look lost out there. But you know what? Let's be honest. Let's not act like the Canadians play in this type of weather regularly. It was cold for them too, and they looked cold. A lot of them had gloves on and long sleeves, and you know, it was the fans though that stole the show, cheering these Canadian men on, and they made it a special night for them. It was really cool to see just the crowd behind them, and I feel that momentum is going to keep building. But I got to ask him, like, why don't these players, are they not allowed to wear pants? I mean, they got the shorts and the high socks that just see a knee. I mean, let these guys put some Canadian sweatpants on or something from Roots.
The goalie maybe can, but no, sometimes guys will wear the longer kind of nylon slack and hike their sock up a bit, but it wasn't freezing temperatures. So, and it's also a mental thing, right? It's an advantage for Canada. Very smart that they put the games in Edmonton. You know, I think the weather, you know, the weather was going to be a factor in Alberta in, you know, mid to late November. Here, Toronto, Montreal, you don't know what you're going to get. It could be seasonably warm. So a good advantage for Canada and, you know, a smart decision. So, and it's good too. It brings the team to more parts of the country as well. So, you know, big momentum.
Yeah. And the top three right now in this group, Canada, US and Mexico. Let's be realistic here. When you look at all the teams in this group, those three should own this group. I mean, I have no idea why Canada hasn't been one of the top three in this group yet before, with the US, Mexico, the size of these three countries alone versus some of these smaller ones, Honduras, Jamaica. I mean, we should be killing these guys. And I think it's Canada's time now. And I think last week on Friday night in Edmonton, it made me and a lot of people that aren't big soccer fans realize, holy smokes, we got something special brewing here that's going to be huge in the next 12 months. And as we discussed before, you just need that local spark. And now this is going to be a soccer crazed country for the next 12 months. I'm all in. So I'll be ordering my jersey and getting ready to rock and roll for the World Cup.
Love to hear that. And that's what's needed, right? That these instances where it creates the attention, gets everybody on board, like the women winning in the Olympics, right. You know, that got everybody on board. And now the men are doing it with the World Cup qualification campaign. So we got to keep momentum rolling here and then pick it up again in January.
And speaking of momentum rolling, let's move into our week 10 picks from the NFL. I am back. With an extra week this year now, anything can happen. I go 3-1 this week. Mike only had the Thursday night Miami covering. I had New England. I had Minnesota. I had Kansas City. The season series still led by Mike, but now it's only 23-17. Mike, you will get first selection this week, but here are the games we will be picking from. The Thursday nighter, New England -6 at Atlanta. Sunday at 1 o'clock, Philadelphia -1.5 versus New Orleans. 4 o'clock, Kansas City -1.5 versus the Dallas Cowboys. And the Sunday nighter, the Los Angeles Chargers -4 versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike, you're up. Where are you going first?
Of all the games last week, I never would have thought the Miami Dolphins would have been the one won. And when they did it on Thursday night, I was like, oh.
You're going to sweep the week.
I'm sweeping the week. That didn't happen. My first pick this week, I'm going to go to the Sunday nighter. And the LA Chargers are favored by 4. I'm taking the Chargers -4. I think, you know, we'll see what happens with Ben if he clears COVID protocols. Minkah Fitzpatrick, their star safety, tested positive today. And they have a couple other question marks with the injuries to TJ Watt and Joe Hayden from Sunday's game against Detroit. So I like the Chargers to get a response here at home on Sunday night.
Perfect. I'm going to the Thursday nighter, and I mentioned it. Patriots are back, and I'm going to stick with them, especially against a Falcons team, which I also talked about, is pretty much done and going to be giving up on their quarterback. This could be the game where Mr. Matty Ice is out, and they'll be bringing in someone else. So I'll go New England -6 on Thursday night.
Two great performances from both these teams this past weekend. I still like Dallas a lot more than Kansas City, and that would be a hell of a win for them. I'm taking the Cowboys +1.5 at Kansas City.
Oh, no.
I have to be strategic. I knew you probably would have went with that. I got to get momentum back on my side.
All right. I understand. Well, you know what? We just talked about the gritty city of Philadelphia, and those fans will be out in full force for the 1 o'clock game on Sunday. 1.5 isn't that much. Jalen Hurts, he can get it done. I'll take the Philadelphia Eagles -1.5. So there you go, our picks for the week. I got 3 favorites. I got New England -6. Mike will take Atlanta. I got Philadelphia -1.5. Mike will have the Saints. I got Kansas City -1.5. Well, Mike has the Cowboys. And on the Sunday nighter, Mike's got the Chargers -4. Well, I have the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now that wraps up our T5. We have a short break, and then we will open up the floor. So come right back. When Mike and I know that there is a topic that we want to dominate, then it's time for Here's the Deal. For today's show, we each have topics that have a bit of a personal connection with. So, Mike, the floor is yours.
On Saturday, we are going to have the start of the Canadian Olympic Curling Trials in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, where the winners on the men's and women's side will represent Canada at the 2022 Olympic Winter Games in Beijing. The top 9 teams that have qualified on the women's side and the men's side are going to compete round robin, 8 games each. Top 3 make it to a page playoff system to determine on Sunday, November 28th, who will be representing our country at the Olympics. This tournament brings out the best of the best every year. As much fun as it is at the Scotties, which represents all of Canada and the Brier as well. This is really the top nine teams in women's curling and men's curling, I should say, as well. There will be instances where numerous teams are from the same province, but it's really the top nine. So teams qualify by winning the national championship, winning some of the big bond spiels throughout the year, and a lot of the tour events. So it's a whole point system, and it really truly is the top nine teams on both the men's and women's side that go after it. So on the women's side, you know, we got some big heavy hitters. Jennifer Jones, a six-time Scotties winner, two-time Worlds. She's from Manitoba. Rachel Holman's team from Ontario, three-time Scotty winners, three straight silvers at the Scotties. And the two-time defending champions at the Scotties, Carrie Anderson's team in Manitoba. I think those are the three top women's teams. And either three of those could win. Jones has been to the Olympics. She won gold in 2014. Holman was there in 2018, but finished sixth. So I like those three on the women's side. On the men's, we got the defending Brier champs, Brendan Blotcher from Alberta, Brad Gushue, who actually represented and won gold for Canada at the 2006 Olympic Games. Team Jacobs from Northern Ontario, they won gold for Canada in 2014. And Kevin Cooey's team from Alberta finished fourth in 2018. I think those four teams are going to be really in the thick of things, but I like Brad Gushue from Newfoundland to pull it away and get back there and hopefully get back and win gold again for the second time in his career. So all the action is going to be on TSN. It's a great, great tournament. They do an exceptional job covering it. And, you know, even if you aren't a curling fan, tune in and see who could be representing our country in a couple months. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. And I may have to adapt to your system, Stark, and get some multiple TVs going for this weekend because there's going to be a lot to watch.
Hurry hard. I love it.
And that is it for me. The floor is now yours, my friend.
I first became aware of Rick Nash when I was 10 years old playing minor Adam for the Mississauga Reps. We were putting together an all-star team for some summer tournaments, and word around the dressing room was this stud from Brampton would be joining us. The Metro Bruins were mostly made up of kids in the GTHL, and Rick showed up as an outsider, as a quiet and polite kid amongst a bunch of all-star kids that all thought we were going to play in the NHL because we played in the G. After one practice, it was obvious he was the best player on the ice, and this team had David Clarkson and a handful of future pro hockey players. Rick joined the Toronto Marlies the next year and dominated the league, and every summer we played in tournaments all over with the Bruins. I realized he was a big deal when we were 13 and played a tournament in Detroit, the Showdown in Motown. It was the finals against Honey Baked, who had future NHLers on their roster as well. But walking through the arena, I could hear people saying they were there just to see Rick Nash play. Rick joined my team, the Mississauga Rebels, in minor Bantam, and something seemed off. I think it is tough to be told you're going to be great from a young age and keep that up year after year. I'm guessing, but I think the pressure was getting to him just 2 years away from the OHL draft. Rick went back to the Marlies for his draft year and recorded 61 goals and 115 points in just 34 games. The expansion Mississauga Ice Dogs had the first pick of the OHL draft that year. Their owner, Don Cherry, would preach on Coach's Corner every Saturday night about local talent and how he was in the rinks watching hockey all the time. But with his first pick, he took Patrick Jarrod from Sault Ste. Marie. All Don had to do was walk across the street from Hershey Center to Iceland to see the next superstar. Cost Don the franchise, in my opinion. Rick was drafted fourth to the London Knights and then first overall to the Columbus Blue Jackets in 2002. In his second season in the NHL, he scored 41 goals, winning the Rocket Richard Trophy. Rick also won two Olympic gold medals for Canada and represented his country in the World Juniors and World Championships. I've not seen Rick in many years, but I've obviously followed his career very closely. So here's the deal. This week, the Blue Jackets announced his number 61 would be the first retired by the organization, and what an honor that must be for Rick and his family. Check out the amazing video online by the Blue Jackets to see how humble Rick is and how the game is still such a huge part of his life. With over 1,000 games played and over 800 points, Rick had an outstanding career and should be considered for the Hall of Fame. Clearly, Rick Nash was the best player I ever played with, and I am proud to say it. Cheers, Rick. Well deserved.
I remember when he didn't come to the Ice Dogs.
Bad move.
That was rough. Yeah. Yeah.
Bad decision there. Each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, I had the Cowboys -9, and as Mike mentioned, that covered by halftime. Well, Mike had Michigan -1, and that was a winner as well. We are hot, so lock these in early. Mike, you still have the tee, so let us know your pick this week.
Staying collegiate, going a little heavy this weekend, folks. Saturday, as we mentioned, the Big Ten, big matchup, Michigan State Spartans at the Ohio State Buckeyes. Ohio State currently favored by 18 points. That's a lot of points. But I'm taking them to beat the Spartans and cover by 18, establishing themselves as the top team in the East for another week as a top four playoff team and setting up a big battle with Michigan in a couple weeks' time. Buckeyes -18.
Wow. Love it.
I don't know why I do, but hey, what the hell?
I'm going to stick with the big boys on Sundays and head to Seattle, where road teams do not do well. Except things have changed and Russ isn't what he used to be, and it showed getting shut out against Green Bay. It's time for video games, so I will take the Arizona Cardinals -2.5 on the road in Seattle. Lock it in. Now, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show. And do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.